number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg it down. Smack on jack.
Nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now. This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan studios, here's Tony D.
Well, it's another national championship for the Alabama Crimson Tide. If you are tired of that repeat record, it's probably going to continue. Nick Saban continues to just reload, reload, reload. They win tonight 45-40. Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. We're taking you through the night tonight, breaking this game down, but also looking ahead to the college football playoffs, recapping what we saw over the weekend. If you'd like to join us on the show, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. You can also hit us up on Facebook at Tony D Radio Show. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Multiple ways you can contact the show to let us know what you're thinking. Is this domination by Alabama something that we should be looking at and being just admiring? Should we be admiring Nick Saban? Should we be admiring Alabama? Or is there something about the recruiting and just sort of the process and the way college football is that makes us go, eh, what do you expect? It's Alabama. Because I think what Nick Saban is doing is incredible. And if he was doing this kind of thing in any other sport, I think he'd be getting a lot more credit for it. I know it's easy to say, well, Alabama recruits, but somebody's doing the recruiting. Oh, anybody can win in Alabama. I don't think that's true. In fact, I know that's not true. Mike Shula couldn't win there. Right? It takes a certain coach that can get into a home and get a kid to come here, especially when you think about it, the way Alabama is so loaded at different positions. It's amazing that he's able to continue to bring in talent who want to be at Alabama, who want to play at Alabama, even though they may not start at Alabama. And he is very good at getting those kids to not only be a part, but to stay a part of the process. Earlier tonight, we talked to Kenyon Drake, who had the kickoff return for a touchdown. I asked him about that. He said, there's a championship mentality. Yeah, we understand that. But he does have a process. You want me to give you the best example of what, of why, how good Nick Saban is at being a coach. And it wasn't just tonight. I'm going to take you back a couple of years ago to the night that Alabama was running over Notre Dame. Remember that game? People like even myself thought Notre Dame would give them a really, really good shot in that national championship game. This was A.J. McCarron, and the Crimson Tide had won the national championship the year before, and they were coming into this game, and people were already trying to knock them down a little bit. Manti Te'o and that incredible Notre Dame defense. Okay. Alabama is rolling over them. The game is well in hand. And A.J. McCarron goes to the line of scrimmage. And there is a moment where him and Barrett Jones, the center, are not on the same page. Now, let me reiterate this. It is late in the game. They're up by a million. It is just closing the game out. But quarterback and center are not on the same page. And McCarron loses his cool at Barrett Jones. Now, the national media, including myself, saw that and said, what is this? Wow, they're up by like double digits, easily cruising to another win. And look at those two guys. They're fighting. A couple of months later, I'm talking to Eli Gold, who is the voice of the Crimson Tide. I asked him about that. And I said, what is it about that moment that you saw differently? That I didn't see. There must have been something going on. It couldn't have just been overly competitive guys just with too much testosterone. And he said, no, there's a process. and they see it, and one sees it and the other one doesn't see it, or one sees it his way, and they have to be on the same page. It doesn't work if they're not on the same page, and it doesn't matter if they're up by 2 or up by 20 or down by 10. They have to see it on the same page. That is the influence of Nick Saban. That's the influence of this coach who continues to recruit the best recruiting classes in the country and coaches them like nobody else. Adam and I were talking that on SportsCenter tonight, there's already a top 10 for 2016, and way too early top 10. They've even called it the way too early. Here it is, because I was able to DVR this so we could give us the way too early top 10. This is a little interesting. Clemson is number one, and Deshaun Watson is coming back. So, great, you know, as good as he's played, I hope we see more of him. Alabama is two. Followed by Baylor, Michigan is at 4, Oklahoma, Florida State, LSU, Stanford, Notre Dame, and number 10, the Houston Cougars.
Oh, I missed the Houston Cougars on there.
Houston Cougars, according to this ESPN pundit. Take that for whatever it is. Remember, there were pundits who said Alabama didn't even deserve to be in the playoffs. So.
All I know is I'm excited as hell to see Michigan on there again.
Yeah, like this isn't, like, here's the thing. If your school is listed, it's all about early respect. That's right. Like, there is enough respect for what Michigan is building to be a early prediction of a top 5 football team.
Right now they're in the college football playoff.
That's right. Lock that in and don't lose it, right? That's the way that goes. That's great. Oh, I love it. I love it.
You should never get enough of college football. It's awesome.
It's great. It is great. And you know what's going to happen in like a month? We're going to have all those national signing day stuff. Yep. As people are going to lose their minds based on recruiting classes. And I it bears repeating on National Signing Day how crazy the world we live in it now compared to the early days of Bear Bryant. Like, Bear Bryant would have a recruiting class and like just tell people it was good. And, like, you'd had to trust him. Like, you had to take his word for it. You're like, okay. Like, Bear would just come out and go, we got our guys. Let me tell you what. We're excited about, we got a quarterback that can throw and running backs who can run and defensive guys who can tackle, and that's it. Bye. And you'd be like, wow, Bear's got himself a class. Like, that's basically what you had. Like, you didn't have any film. You couldn't go to YouTube. You listen, if you were writing for like the Tuscaloosa Daily Times or whatever it was, you couldn't even go to the library and get like articles from other small newspapers across the country just to find out if he's telling the truth.
The good thing back then was at least a majority of those kids were from the area.
Right.
They weren't going to California to bring kids over, maybe every once in a while, but mainly it was Alabama, maybe into Louisiana, you know, is that little area. So if you wanted to see a kid, you had to drive to see him.
Right, exactly. So if Bear told you that Mike Jones, some defensive tackle from Opelika, was on his radar, you had to drive to Opelika to check him out.
Exactly.
Like, you couldn't call the coach and just have video sent over via email. But today, it's so different because, like, you can have a coach go, we just think our recruiting class is one of the best in the nation. And people go, you're lying. It's like ranked 28th by Rivals and Scout. Like, you're not even in the top 10. And if you are a school president and you know nothing about this stuff, like, you are a school president and you don't know anything about how this works. You just see in the paper that you're ranked 28th in recruiting. You go, hey, I got to fire somebody, I think, yeah. Right?
I got to make a call to see if I need to fire somebody.
Am I supposed to let somebody go? Like, coach, do you have like a director of scouting or something like that we could fire? Because I'm getting heat that we're ranked 28th in the latest recruiting class. It's got to be a headache that coaches just can't stand.
Speaking of way too early for next year college football, putting you on the spot, who's your Heisman winner for 2016?
Deshaun Watson.
There's two guys. Well, also you got to remember Christian
McCaffrey.
So I mean, that's going to be a great race from the beginning.
I hope both of those guys don't disappoint in their next year. Right?
And then we'll have Leonard Fournette as well.
Yeah, Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Deshaun Watson are your top three going in to the Heisman Trophy. I know somebody's listening right now. Go, it's January. Hey, I get it.
This
we're having
happens
fun
everywhere. You
everywhere.
Go.
So chill. But yeah, you're right. And then there's, you know, then there's always, of course, the unknown guys right. that emerge and take off and have, you know, all of a sudden you're like, wow, we're talking about them.
I'm sure I want Kenyon McCaffrey Drake will be in there.
I want McCaffrey to have a as good of a season as he's, as if not better than.
Can you imagine if he backs up this past season?
I hope he does.
The exact same season or better.
I hope he does, because what we saw at the Rose Bowl was so good.
Oh,
and
my God.
And it finally got people going, holy cow, this kid's great. For a lot of people, that may have been their first time ever seeing him, because the Rose Bowl is one of those brings in a lot more people to the party. I hope he can tap off of that with the Heisman Trophy. Because if Clemson wins it, you know, hey, I'm not all for that. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Ryan Hannibal's going to join us in 15 minutes from WEEI.com. We're going to talk about the New England Patriots, who are all healed up and ready to go against the Kansas City Chiefs coming up on Saturday in Foxborough. You smell an upset with that one? Because I am. I think the Chiefs can win that game. Jeremy Maclin is hurt, dealing with some ankle sprain. He's a big problem. He's a big problem for the Chiefs. He needs to be healthy, but I think I can smell an upset here.
That defense will keep them in it enough that crazy things could happen, basically. And I'm not saying it'd be crazy if they upset them, but you know, if your defense keeps you close into the fourth quarter, you never know what can happen.
Ben Violin, who writes for the Boston Globe, had a very good analysis of this game coming up on Saturday. He said, "Look, even though it happened last year, and that was a long time ago, that game against the Patriots where the Chiefs, you know, throttled New England and Brady threw two picks. Remember when Jimmy Garoppolo got in the game and there was, oh, the Patriots are done. They're benching Tom Brady." He says, while that was a long time ago, there are key players for the Chiefs from that team that still can cause New England problems. And the offensive line now is more beat up and worse than it was that night. Talking about Justin Houston and some of the guys on the defensive front that got to Brady and caused a lot of disruption, saying that the offensive line now, they're hurt, but they're in worse shape than they were that night. And there's a little bit of a factor there. And I kind of thought that was interesting, because I never really put a lot of stock into games that were, like, you know, even last year or even 10 weeks ago. But that's a concern, because the Chiefs can come. They can bring pressure. And so I don't know. I am not smelling one in Denver, though. Reports are Ben Roethlisberger should be okay, but shoulder injury is a shoulder injury. It's not like it's healing tomorrow. And I'm getting conflicting reports on Antonio Brown. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reports that Antonio Brown should be fine. And I guess Bob Holtzman at ESPN saying that he's going to be in the concussion protocol and is likely he will not play. So I am not smelling an upset for Pittsburgh in Denver, Colorado. In fact, I think the Broncos are going to pretty much ease through that game and get to the AFC title game. All right, Alabama won the national championship. They defeated Clemson. We know that. But Nick Saban spoke at the end of the game. Here is St. Nick on what a tough game this was.
It was a tough game. You got to give Clemson players a lot of credit. They've really got a good team. This is a great challenge for us. I am so proud of our players, though, the way they competed, especially in the second half.
You know, we were talking earlier about how Deshaun Watson of Clemson hadn't faced a defense like what Alabama was bringing. But Alabama, I mean, all due respect to Dak Prescott, who's a great dual threat quarterback, Alabama's not faced a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, a guy that throws with like an effortless toss, can run, can escape, had really, really smart quarterback. Dak Prescott is probably the closest in the SEC that they have to that kind of level, but there is nobody even close to Deshaun Watson in the SEC. So he's right. This was a tough game. This was, a lot of people thought this would be a tough game. And Alabama was able to, get the win and win their fourth national title in 7 years. This is a big win, Nick says, for the players.
This is all about winning a game for them. You know, it's great for our fans. It's great for the state of Alabama. But I wanted to win this game for these guys, man. They've done a great job for us this year.
Oh boy, he wants to win for the. When does a coach not want to win for his players? When will that answer ever be, you know what, I'm just really glad for myself? I mean, after all, I put a lot of work into this. You don't even realize how much time I spent away from my family to put this together. So, yeah, praise me. I put this together. I win it. It is mine. No, of course you want to win for your players. These guys work their tail off. It's hot in the summer in Alabama. They're putting themselves through whatever 2 days they're going through in the offseason. And here's the other thing. They had to rebound and come together after losing to Ole Miss. They had a tough schedule left. It's not like they lost to Ole Miss second to last game of the season. They lost to Ole Miss early, and there was a lot of games on their schedule that were going to be tough and hard to come by. And they knew that you just can't lose twice. That one loss could get you into the playoff, but two losses was probably going to keep you out. So they had to go the rest of the way without losing in order to get their opportunity to win a national title, and the players all came through for it. He is happy for the team.
I've always said this is my, I hate to say favorite team, but because I love them all. All right, but these guys have come so far and done so much. You know, their will, their spirit, you know, to compete and do things they needed to do to be the kind of team they could be. I'm so happy for the team.
Oh, this guy is great. This guy, one of the things about Saban, did you notice these last two answers from Saban? He is always selling. Look at the way he's selling the program in those kind. That's genuine. And he is really giving you the, man, this is all about you when you come play for me. This will always be about you. Now, O.J. Howard was the big hero in this game. Two touchdowns after pretty much being non-existent for the entire season. I think his last touchdown came when he was a freshman in 2013. He had two touchdowns tonight. He was open on both of them as Clemson sort of forgot to cover him. Here's Nick Saban on the contributions of Howard.
We've been trying to get the ball to him more and more and more, and he certainly made some big plays tonight, and he's a great player for us and a weapon for us on offense.
I wouldn't say a weapon, Nick. I wouldn't say a weapon, but he certainly was tonight. Boy, Clemson just left him wide open. Those were the two biggest defensive lapses Clemson had tonight. And a night that I thought that they did pretty well, despite the injury that they had earlier tonight. That was the two big mistakes that they had in coverage. Brent Venables called himself a very good game. But those two opportunities for O.J. Howard to score touchdowns were big mental lapses by the Clemson defense. He talked about momentum swing. It did go back and forth a lot in this game. Here's Nick on that.
We didn't seem to have the juice like we had them against Michigan State, but they fought and fought and battled and battled. And obviously we didn't play great on defense in the end, but, you know, the onside kick was huge. It was a great kick by Griff. I think that changed the momentum of the game, and our guys finished it.
That was a great call at the right time. In fact, I had to kind of pause it and say, "What? How?" I didn't realize it when it was going down. I didn't even expect it. It was that good of the at the moment.
I still don't know what Dabo was yelling about. I was confused.
Maybe it was the idea of advancing, but I think Dabo was just caught off guard.
I think,
really,
yeah, he was just furious because he's supposed to be the one that does stuff like that,
right?
Not Saban,
right? And you know what's funny about this is that this is the kind of night where I had it all wrong, because I thought Clemson was going to have to throw everything in the kitchen sink at Alabama. And Alabama, if they just played their game, they would win. Alabama needed to change some things up.
They
needed that onside kick. They needed a special teams return for a touchdown. They really needed to mix some things up in order to beat Clemson. So this was a game where Nick Saban, I think, realized it's time to take some chances and took some chances.
Clemson played about as good of a game as you can outside of four plays. The onside kick, the return kick, and then the two O.J. Howard touchdowns.
Yep.
Outside of that,
exactly
they played great. I mean, if you take away those four, they dominate this game and probably win by 2 to 3 touchdowns.
Yep. Here's Nick Saban one more time on special teams, and that was the difference, especially in the fourth quarter.
We weren't playing very well on defense. It was a tie game. I thought we needed to do something that was going to change the momentum of the game, and that certainly did. But then the kickoff return was big, too, so special teams really did it for us.
That's it. Nick Saban on the national championship, his fourth at Alabama, his fifth overall after winning one at LSU. Again, Alabama winning 4 in 7 years. All right, we're going to get to the NFL. Ryan Hannibal will join us, WEEI.com, on the New England Patriots. They have lost 4 of their last 6, but they've got a week off. They'll be facing Kansas City. Are they still vulnerable to injuries? We'll get an update on that coming up next. It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us as we continue to look at the upcoming NFL playoffs. Well, the New England Patriots had a bye and now will face the hottest team in the NFL coming into the postseason, the Kansas City Chiefs, who have won 11 in a row. And the Patriots have dropped four of their last six. We bring in Ryan Hannibal from WEEI.com to help us look at what New England is bringing to the table this postseason. How are you, Ryan?
How are you doing tonight?
Good. All right, so a lot of people are looking at the Patriots and saying, all right, there's something wrong with New England. So I have to ask you, is something wrong with New England as they head to the postseason?
I wouldn't say there's anything wrong. I think it's just a matter of, you know, getting some guys back healthy. You know, going down the stretch towards the end of the season, they're clearly were, you know, banged up. And I think if you look at the final two games of the regular season, it looked like they, you know, wanted to go into the postseason healthy as opposed to the number one seed. So I wouldn't say that they, you know, gave away the last two games of the season. They definitely prioritized health going into those two games. So I think, you know, those two losses sort of look big on the schedule. But if you look at the grand scheme of things, that sort of was part of the whole grand plan, is to make sure they went postseason healthy. And it shows right now. It looks like they're going to get Julian Edelman back for the game. Sebastian Vollmer should be back. Rob Gronkowski, Danny Amendola should be back to 100%. Same thing with Dante Hightower. So I think when you look at the Patriots, it's just a matter of health, and I think they're heading in the right direction.
All right, Julian Edelman, I know, has been working at full speed. I'm assuming that he's good to go. Any lingering issues with him?
No, he actually talked for the first extensive time today since actually breaking the foot. So that was obviously a good sign because, you know, around Gillette Stadium, if you talk to the media, that's usually a good sign that you're going to play. And then, like you said, at practice, he looked like he was going full speed and the drills that we were able to see today. So I think, all you know, it looks good for Edelman. I mean, I would say that he's probably going to be on a little bit of a snap count. You know, I wouldn't expect him to play all the offensive snaps, but I think everything looks good for him to play, you know, an expansive role in the game on Saturday.
Talk about the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of what they bring to this game. They've won 11 in a row. What is it about that team that could give the Patriots some trouble?
I mean, they're not really a flashy team by any means. They just do, you know, a lot of things well. I mean, the biggest thing that stands out is the turnovers. They really can cause turnovers on defense. I think in their 11-game win streak, they've been winning the turnover battle 28-8. So, you know, that's a pretty big margin. But again, if you look back to the Patriots, that's sort of what they, you know, pride themselves in, is not turning the ball over, especially Tom Brady at quarterback. So that's definitely one of the big keys to the game, is that if the Chiefs can force Brady and the Patriots offense into turning the ball over, I think the Chiefs would actually, you know, be in a good position to win. But on the flip side of that, you really don't see the Patriots turning the ball over in big games. So that's definitely something to watch come Saturday.
Ryan Hannibal joins us, WEEI.com in Boston, where the New England Patriots will take on the Kansas City Chiefs coming up this weekend in the NFL postseason. As far as the offensive line, and you've been talking about health and how healthy they're getting, how does the offensive line look heading into the playoffs?
That's another area of concern. I mean, from a health perspective, they get Sebastian Vollmer back, but I mean, they really haven't settled on a consistent group of five guys all season long. I want to say they've had 12 different starting offensive line combinations this season, which is an insane number. And I think it goes to show us the number of times that Tom Brady's been sacked this year. I mean, he hasn't really had the time to throw a blade. I think a lot of that has to go back to not having Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola at 100%, since Brady's at his best when he's getting the ball quick. But I think, like you mentioned, the offensive line is definitely cause for concern. I mean, they're probably going to be starting one or two rookies on the offensive line in Shaq Mason or Trey Jackson and potentially, you know, David Andrews. But the offensive line has been in flux all season long. They haven't really settled on a consistent five guys. So the Kansas City defense is known for getting after the quarterback, so they're definitely going to have their work out for him this week.
What is the big concern for New England outside of health going into these playoffs? When you look at the teams that are remaining and the potential matchups in the AFC, again, a team like Denver, they could be facing them on the road against that kind of defense. What is the one thing that's sticking out from what the Patriots are lacking this season?
If you look at it, to me, I think it's their lack of depth at the cornerback position. They've sort of been vulnerable to some big plays in the past game, and opposing quarterbacks have really attacked the number three cornerback position for the Patriots. So not necessarily a team's top receiver, but probably their, you know, number two or number three receiver have had some pretty big games against the Patriots. And not only games, but just big plays in general. I think against the Dolphins to end the season, they allowed six passing plays of more than 20 yards. So I think the one thing the Patriots defense has shown this year is they've been vulnerable to some big plays. And I think in the playoffs, you know, we know that the games can turn with one play, and you really don't want to have one of those big plays come at the wrong time.
Is there an issue with the running game? They don't run the ball, but they don't have to with Tom Brady. But in the playoffs, would they like a better running game?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that was one of the things that they wanted to do against the Dolphins to end the season with, sort of, you know, get that running game back on track, get Steven Jackson, you know, get back into the flow of playing in an NFL game. Because, like you said, the running game is not going to be the focal part of the offense with Tom Brady. But if you can run the ball, you know, a little bit to keep the defense honest, that just opens up the playbook even more for Brady in the offense, sets up play action. So I think going to the players, they're going to want to run the ball at least a little bit to keep the defense honest. And, you know, the last game of the season didn't really give the team much to show for it. But I think that's something that they'll look to do against the Chiefs. And when you have a guy like Steven Jackson, you know, I think it only takes one or two weeks for him to get back in things. So I think it'll be better than what we saw at the end of the year.
And how would you assess the way Tom Brady has played in the latter half of this season?
He hasn't been as good as he was to open season. There's no doubt about it. But I think part of that comes back to who he's actually had, you know, on the field with them. You know, Rob Gronkowski missed a game. Edelman hasn't played in about 2 months. Danny Amendola's missed a couple of games. You know, he's been thrown to guys like, you know, Keyshawn Martin, Scott Chandler, Brandon LaFell, just not the names that he's been used to seeing. And I didn't even mention Deion Lewis. You know, he was lost for the season earlier in the year. So Brady just hasn't, you know, had the same weapons that he once had to begin the season. So I think Brady himself has played pretty much the same. It's just a matter of that he hasn't really had the guys around him that he had earlier in the season, that maybe the stats looked better earlier as opposed to they do now.
Ryan Hannibal again, WEEI.com. And I know, Ryan, that they are going to be very, very tight-lipped on anything or any type of rumors that are going around. But what's the buzz about Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia about their head coaching opportunities?
Yeah, they're both rasped about, you know, their possible head coaching candidates, say, on conference calls, and both really didn't want to get into it, say that they're both, you know, focused on the Kansas City Chiefs. It was known that Matt Patricia interviewed with the Browns on Saturday. It was first ever, you know, coaching interview, and I think this is really first offseason that his name sort of came out with, you know, being mentioned with potential job opening. So I think for Patricia, it's more of just a feeling out process or getting into, you know, what it's like to interview for a job. And I think one day he'll be ready to be a head coach, but I don't think right now is the time. I think he needs another, you know, year or two just to, you know, establish himself more than he has done now. McDaniels is an interesting one because obviously we know that he has past head coaching experience. I think what McDaniels is doing right now is sort of waiting for the best job and the best fit to open up. And if you look at some of the openings right now, I kind of look towards the Giants one. You know, if they were to offer him the job, it's kind of hard to say no. That's a prime team with a stable owner, stable organization with, you know, a good quarterback in Eli Manning. And then I also think that Bill Belichick would sort of give all of his blessings to go over to the Giants because, as you know, Belichick loves the Giants. So if you look at potential fit, I sort of see it as that. But we really, you know, won't get any further news on that until, you know, the Patriots season ends. But if I had to guess, I kind of think he's going to stay with the Patriots just the way that things have gone.
Ryan Hannibal again, WEEI.com on the Patriots. Will take on Kansas City on Saturday. Really appreciate your time tonight. Thank you so much.
Oh, not a problem. Anytime.
And again, Ryan Hannibal, WEEI.com on the Patriots as they take on the Kansas City Chiefs coming up on Saturday. I don't know. Like I said earlier, I'm smelling a little upset, but he's basically reporting that, look, all the injuries, all the things that have plagued New England over the last couple of weeks to close out the season, a lot of that has been healed up and they should be good to go. I love the way at the beginning of that interview, did you hear him say that, look, they were more concerned about the injuries than they were about protecting home field, which was really odd because on the one hand, you absolutely cannot win without Gronk and you really have a hard time winning if your offensive line is that depleted. But home field is a big deal. Going to Denver, I don't care who you are, that's no joke. It's cold there. I know New England, it's cold as well. But you're playing at high altitude. You just don't want to trick it. But injuries were a problem for this team. And, you know, they did sort of lean on that before they leaned on home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs. 800-777-2907. All right, we'll get more into the weekend, including the embarrassment in Cincinnati, the ramifications of the Pittsburgh Bengals game next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
800-777-2907. You want to comment on the national championship game tonight and the performance of Alabama, the performance of Clemson for that matter. Also, the college, the NFL playoffs coming up this weekend. So the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cincinnati Bengals were involved in a game that I thought was an embarrassment to the league, an embarrassment to both teams. Just a game that was ended up being a mess. Montez Burfict has been suspended 3 games going into next season for his hit on Antonio Brown. That didn't come as a surprise. But if you're the NFL, is there any way you can control a game like this, like what we saw on Saturday night? Is there any way the NFL can control a game like that, that gets so out of control, that gets so emotional? They tried, and it still got out of hand. It's one thing if something catches you off guard. If you're the NBA and you have no idea that Oklahoma City and Utah are going to just duke it out, and then they do. But it's another when you try to put steps in place to calm something down that you know is going to be volatile, and yet it still breaks out like it did. That's what happened in the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. They're not only division rivals, but they've had problems whenever they face each other. So the NFL basically told the officials in that game on Saturday, here's what we're going to be doing. We want you to call it a little, you know, the game a little tight. We want them to know that we're not loosening this up for potential retaliation. But also remember, too, if there is an altercation, we are flagging one person and one person only. We are not doing offsetting penalties. Now, here's the thing. On the surface, I disagree with that at times. But this is the only weapon a league has to sort of keep things in check. Because you know how offsetting penalties work. If I punch you and you punch me, nothing gets changed. No one gets punished. The only thing that I'm risking is the possible ejection of the game. But I'm not really costing my team anything. So if you attack me and I retaliate, we don't hurt each other. But the officials in that game were told we're not going to do that. Somebody's going to get punished, and we're hoping that that calms everybody down a little bit. But it still was an incredibly chippy game that lent itself to Joey Porter being on the field when he's not supposed to, Pac-Man Jones responding to the trash-talking of Porter that led him to come in contact with an official that drew an additional flag off of the personal foul on Antonio Brown. So here's the game in a nutshell for the NFL. How do you fix it? How do you fix it? Now, one of the things the NFL got in on Sunday was 2 games in which the storylines did not continue the "this is a really embarrassment to the league" storyline. It was a cold game in Minnesota. It was a little bit of that throwback into the old Minnesota Viking days. I mean, my God, Bud Grant is running out there without sleeves on his shirt. And a Blair Walsh missed field goal enacts sympathy across the board, because who wants to be the kicker that costs his team a playoff win? And then the Green Bay Packers beat Washington. So you got this sort of this rebirth of the Green Bay Packers. But nevertheless, the stink of Saturday night was lingering in the offices on Monday. I do not know how the league can do anything to sort of calm these kind of games down.
What about,
it's a bad game.
What about a system that, you know, is like the NBA or, you know, college basketball? 2 technicals and you're out of the game. You know, something along the 2 dead ball personal fouls and you're out of the game. Or 3.
Yeah.
You know, I think 2 is what it should be. I mean, if you start kicking these guys out of the game, they're not going to do this.
Yeah, I agree.
Because their ultimate goal is to be in this game and win the games.
That's the hope, right? You got to, because the thing that bothered me about the game from a Cincinnati side is that, Adam Pac-Man Jones is not a rookie, all right? So he knows that he could be penalized by overreacting to Joey Porter. Just let Joey Porter run his mouth.
Right.
Just let him run his mouth.
Well, and you know, honestly, the NFL got lucky in this game because imagine if the Steelers or the Bengals were up by 21 at that point.
Oh,
there,
right.
There would have been a brawl. Right. They would That's have brawled right. no matter what. Like, they would not have cared because, you know, especially the losing team. If it was the Bengals and if Burfict was down 21 points, I mean, look how he acted when it was a close game and they're trying to win the game.
Oh, absolutely.
How would he have been if they weren't?
And so, yeah, and that's the thing that if I'm in the NFL, I got to start wondering about, okay, I have to start implementing some serious penalties, even if it costs teams valuable players down the line. Because Burfict went from a potential hero in that game to being the guy that cost the Bengals a victory. Literally, making that interception was supposed to pretty much seal it for Cincinnati. And, you know, Jeremy Hill fumbles it. I get it. But he had it, you know, that was the signature moment of the game. But, man, I just, even today, hearing things like, well, Joey Porter may not have had quite, you know, permission to be on the field. I mean, that kind of stuff was like, really, just, you know, I'm wondering if it was intentional, if Joey Porter going out there was meant to cause them to sort of, and I don't like that. I don't want Joey Porter trying to elicit a flag from a player. That's not what I want to hear. I think that game, there were so many things wrong coming out of that game. It's one of the worst playoff outcomes. Not in a sense of like the Steelers didn't deserve to win. I'm just talking from a standpoint of, I felt worse watching that game than I did before I watched it. Well, I felt like
there needs to be a rule of no coaches on the field except the head coach and then trainers for injured players.
Yeah, I know. And then they say, well, he was genuinely concerned. I'm pretty sure everybody was genuinely. It's not just Joey
Porter.
You got
fans on the field now?
Everybody's genuinely concerned. You went out there to run your mouth, and that's what he did.